available at tribalaffairs.ca.gov/CTHC. And when we get to the public comment portion of any action agenda item or the public comment period, you may request to give public comment by raising your hand, and James will explain how to do that when we get to that point in time. You may also email written comments to info@catruthandhealing.com. That's again all spelled out, at your convenience. Now, before we begin, I'd like to remind participants that all of our council members, council staff, and many of you are members of the victim population in need of collective healing. So I ask that you engage with the council, our office, and each other with respect and with your whole heart in a healing mindset. With that, we will begin with a short roll call before we go into a traditional opening. So we'll start with Central, Councilmember Khan.
Present.
Councilmember Kessler Mata.
Present.
Councilmember Macaro.
Here.
Councilmember Manzano. Councilmember Burris.
Present.
Councilmember Perrone. Councilmember Sisk. And Councilmember Roberts. And I can see Councilmember Roberts. So, okay. We can't hear you though. So just for the record, Councilmember Roberts is in attendance.
Christina, did you call the northern section?
I went central, eastern, and next is northern.
Oh,
so
yeah.
For Councilmember Roberts, you are a voting member for today's meeting. For northern, Councilmember Bohorquez.
Present.
Councilmember Harper.
Present.
Councilmember Myers.
Here.
And Councilmember Giovanetti.
Present.
Councilmember Elliot Santos.
Present.
Councilmember Lucas. And I can't hear her, but she is present for the record. Councilmember Turner. And Councilmember Phelps.
Present.
Councilmember Phelps, you are a voting member for this meeting. So we do have a quorum for business, and I will hand it over to our esteemed guest today, Assemblymember Ramos.
Thank you. Thank you for this invitation to speak and to say a few words and to offer a song. The song I'm going to offer is a Serrano song, Bighorn Sheep song. Ba, ba, Danaiva, ba. It's a bighorn sheep, Danaiva, searching for the bighorn sheep. So I'm going to go ahead and open up with that song. It's really, in our culture, songs are a part of blessings also. So we're going to go ahead and open that up for this important job that each and every one of you have in moving California Indian people forward. Thank you for inviting me to sing a song and do a blessing. There's so many of our people that still need our thoughts and prayers as they go through many things in their lives. So I ask for you to do those and keep our elders and those in our prayers daily. I've also been asked to talk a little bit about the when the governor issued the first executive order, and to a little bit into what we've been able to accomplish here at the state legislature with many of your support that's on this Truth and Healing Council. I see so many familiar faces and working with those from years ago to where we're at now. Carmen Lucas is definitely one of those that I wanted to say hi to. Me and Michael Redorte spent a lot of time in working with you. So thank you for your undying effort to preserve the culture of your tribe and the whole state of California. We also want to recognize Christina Snyder as being another one of the first in a position that helps to move California Indian issues forward for the whole benefit of the state of California. We were there, we were fortunate enough and honored enough to be there with many of you with the governor when he issued the executive order, and did a formal apology on behalf of the state of California for atrocities and genocide that was inflicted upon Californian people. That opened up the avenue for us to start to educate the state of California on the true history of the Californian people and the atrocities and genocide that has happened. You all are assembled here today in this Truth and Healing Council, and you've been working together, and I stress working together, to try to bring forth the healing in the state of California towards our people and for our people and many of our elders that have gone on ahead of us. So the work that stands in front of all of us is something that should bring us together, together as Indian people. There's so much that has to be done. There's so much that has gone through the history of the state of California and left out the true history of Californian people. I sit in the state legislature as the only California Indian elected, but we need more elected into the state legislature and to the local municipalities that are there. But it's being the first for in over 170 years. We can't fix everything within a year or 2 years or even 4 years. And it's going to take longer to get to the point to where we need to make sure that everyone's true story is being told in the state of California when dealing with California Indian people. So knowing that there's so much that we have to do, and knowing that there's so much that's on your plate as the leaders of California Indian people on this Truth and Healing Council, I would say find those things that bring us together as Indian people. I know working with Carmen Lucas and there with Michael Redorte, we came together on repatriation, cultural resources. Those are things that I believe we could all agree that need to move forward. These are things that we have to take steps in making sure that as Californian people, we truly understand those issues. Issues that will bring us to full circle of that full healing that will take place. It's by working together on common goals that we could all agree on. Certainly, for over 170 years, not having that presence to be that voice is something that's it's a hard area to move forward as Indian people. It's a big task, but let's try to make sure that we're not trying to correct 170 years within a 1 year or 2 year period. Let's find those areas and gradually get to where we need to be. Some will say, well, that would take too long. Well, it will, but anything that's worth changing takes the commitment and the zealousness to see that change take place and to test the system with bills that many of you are supporting that we've introduced. One bill in particular, AB 338, takes on Wampato setup and the mission system that destroys so many of our people in the state of California, but yet that true history has never been told. That bill, AB 338, is moving through the state legislature with many of your support, and it will call on the local people in Sacramento to come together to put forward a monument to the local people from the area. That would then open up the avenue for others to start to discuss those types of monuments, those types of replacements in their own areas throughout the state of California. Another bill that now has moved out of Senator Probst that will be on the full Senate floor coming forward, and then the next step would be to the governor, would be for the first time in history where the California state courts would be closed and it would be a paid holiday for the court systems in the state of California, honoring California Native American Day, the fourth Friday in September. And what this bill does, it exchanges Columbus Day as a paid holiday for California Native American Day as a paid holiday, meaning that on California Native American Day, once we get this to the governor, he signs it, courts will be closed in honoring our people, all people from the state of California and all California Indian people for the atrocities, genocide, and positive things that the Indian people have benefited and contributed to the state of California. Another bill that we're working hard on, became a two-year bill, is called, it's AB 1554, and it's tied to ACA 6. And this calls for the California Indian Education Act. This would then call on the fourth grade, third and fourth grade, to learn the factual sights and sounds of the tribes in your own backyard. And in the eighth grade, when you learn about the history of the state of California, there's no way you can learn about the history of the state and leave the California Indian people out of it. We're California's first people. That will start to address the history that many on this council understand that have happened here in the state of California. And then in the 11th grade, when we learn about governmental systems, federal, state, local governments, that there would be an inclusion of a tribal government involved in those areas. These are issues that we're still pushing and making sure that they move forward. These are issues that we're able to come together as Indian people to push those issues forward. Now, trying to correct a lot of things that has happened in not only in the state of California and their history, but also within ourselves as Indian people, learning to come together, learning to work on common issues, learning to show a unified front when we're in front of those that we need to show that unified front to. There's many issues that as Indian people here in my tribe, I was tribal chairman, many issues that we had agreement on, but there were some that we had disagreement on. Let's focus on the agreement that we have on the issues moving forward, because I see this Truth and Healing Council not of something that will end in the years coming forward, but it's starting to lay the groundwork for what truly needs to happen in the state of California. We sit as the only California Indian elected in the state legislature, Serrano and Cahuilla. Here, I live on the San Manuel Indian Reservation. We need more. We need more of our people in these seats because representation truly matters. When we talk about the mission system and the era and how it affected our people, there's no better voice than our own people's voice telling that story. When we talk about why some of our elders in the state of California were hesitant to take the vaccine, Moderna, Pfizer, whichever one it was, when no one even knew in the legislature or even the medical field that there was a sterilization policy inflicted upon our women in the 70s. That type of education, those types of issues, that type has to continue to move forward and educate the legislature, educate your board of supervisors, educate your local municipalities, but also educate ourselves on the history that affected all of our people. Because after all, when we look at the repatriation process, when we look at the remains, it's still over 500,000 remains still sit in the archives of the UC system in the state of California. Many of those remains are ancestors of our California Indian people, as well as other remains from other tribes from throughout the United States. But I think those are the issues that we could agree on that need to be repatriated back for proper reburial. So let's move forward in one accord. Let's make sure that we're giving this opportunity that we have to honor all of our ancestors to move forward at a pace where we could bring some resolve. Again, California is seeing many of its first, myself included, Christina Snyder in the governmental office that's there and with the governor. But we also have to give patience to work with one another, to move California Indian people forward in one accord. Let's stand united on the issues that we agree on and the things that we need to discuss. Let's discuss them around the table. But let's make sure as we move forward that we're honoring all of our California Indian ancestors and moving forward. I want to thank you for letting me speak and talk about the importance of the governor's executive and the work that we have ahead of us to move California forward, to educate them on who we truly are as California Indian people, to start to look at the books that are being taught in the school systems on who we are. Who better to be that voice than us? And the representation in all of the politics and governmental areas in our districts. Let's make sure that we're encouraging one another to run for office and get more California Indian people elected, not only in the state legislature, but within our local governments. I want to thank you for being able to speak and share a few words.
Thank you, Assemblymember Ramos. And now we have a brief clip of a statement from the governor, and also we'll have a clip of the apology event. And then if council members would like to react or have anything they'd like to say to the assembly member, you'll have the floor at that time.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Governor Gavin Newsom, and I'm honored and humbled to join you. It was roughly 2 years ago that I signed an executive order to both apologize for the state's historical atrocities against the First Peoples of this place and to establish this council. Today, I appreciate the opportunity to express my ongoing support for the foundational work that all of you have been doing to advance the principles of this council. But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge that I'm joining you from the ancestral lands of the Nisenan and Miwok peoples. Every day, we're working just a little bit harder in a more informed viewpoint towards better developing California's understanding of the complex issues facing California Native Americans. As you all are very, very aware, the state has a long history of ignoring, disregarding, or excluding California Native peoples and their experiences. A part of this has to do with a failure to acknowledge the truth of the state's origins, that the Native populations up and down the lands did not just disappear when Americans discovered gold. To create this state, early Californians removed Native people from their ancestral lands, either through brute physical relocation or outright massacre. Legislative California Native peoples out of their role in managing these lands and removed from the history book any traces of what came before. In doing this work on the Truth and Healing Council, you'll shine a light on the state's systemic and intentional destruction of Native ancestral lands, peoples, and resources. And you also have an opportunity to make recommendations for reparations and have at your disposal the digital atlas of California Native Americans. The task ahead of you is daunting, but we're ready to do whatever it takes to make things right. In conjunction with your work, I've tasked my administration with seeking out opportunities to tackle these issues head-on and truly elevate the priorities of California Native peoples. Thank you all for joining me in this effort, and I'm looking forward to being a resource for you.
The acknowledgement from the governor are a lot of things that our people have known, the atrocities that have happened to us, but now to finally have it recognized by the state of California means a lot.
It's humbling for me, having believed I was educated, to have been so ignorant of our past, to have been so unaware of how ashamed I should be as a Californian, fifth generation, about how so many of your ancestors were treated. Coordination, collaboration, vigilantes, militiamen, federal soldiers working in concert. It's called a genocide. That's what it was, a genocide. And so I'm here to say the following. I'm sorry on behalf of the state of California.
It's a long time coming. You know, we've waited for generations for this apology to come. to see a governor of the state of California, an individual who represents all of the citizens within the state, come and humble himself before the tribes and issue a very heartfelt apology. It means a lot.
Great. So at this time, if any council members would like to share any opening comments, any opening remarks, any thoughts, you are welcome to do so.
This is Dr. Joe Giovannetti, council member, and I wanted to thank James for his presentation and the song. I think that especially the hope that we've had for, gosh, a generation now, that school curricula could change, that people wouldn't wince and draw back away from the morally responsible thing of doing and telling the truth about American Indian history, California Indian history. And, you know, we walk in such a complicated web of relationships. Technically, in many settings, tribal peoples and from California and elsewhere, we owe our allegiances to our tribal governments and their laws, the state of California in many situations, and to federal laws affecting American Indians. But we get to explain, you know, through education, having been a professor at one time, you know, the complexity of people owing their allegiance to three different sovereigns, but that we still fight for and represent tribal sovereignty for both our tribal governments and our own tribal legislation, you know, our laws, and also cultural sovereignty. Thank you.
Christina?
Yes, Council Member.
Okay, I didn't know if my audio was working. Assemblyman Ramos, thanks for being here today. Really enjoyed your words, and in particular, you've given us a really solid frame, a good frame for moving our work forward, and that is focusing on those things that unite us and that we can agree on as Californian Indigenous people. And I think that's really important as we go through the work that we're going through to focus on those things. I think that'll help us get through the tough work ahead of, you know, collecting this record and, you know, at the end, figuring out what is going to be the best thing for not only us, but I think all of California. So appreciate your thoughts, appreciate your words, and look for good luck on your bills. Hope to do all we can to help you out and help us out in the process. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairman.
Christina, if I may, Assemblymember Ramos, Kenny Khan from the Chumash Nation here in Santa Barbara County area. Want to echo those sentiments. You know, it wasn't long ago our tribe was learning how to navigate, you know, the state process and started meeting with legislators to teach them about our history, to teach them about, you know, what we know, the impacts here in California. And it really means a lot to us to have a Native person that's sitting in and walking through the halls of the state capitol, educating, sharing your customs and your traditions, and representing us alongside all of the people in your district in the state of California. So the educational process, I really appreciate your words on not only learning and teaching from each other and sharing, but also being willing to learn ourselves. It is so important because our tribes are, you know, California is a big state, and our tribes had different impacts, you know, throughout the state. So to share our story, to share our pain, is certainly the first steps towards healing. This is a big job, and there's a lot of things that we don't know, and so we're going to do our best to work with you, legislators, and the people of California, the indigenous people of California, to move forward. So thank you for all the good work that you do, and look forward to supporting you and your endeavors along with those bills as well.
Aho. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Other council members? Oh, Councilmember Bohorquez.
Assemblywoman Ramos, thank you for those words. That guidance, that wisdom, that experience, thank you so much. It really was heartfelt, and it does focus us. It keeps us in the direction in which we need to move. It reminds me of our ancestors when they spoke of their dreams, of what was to come, and our dreams of what we yet to see come. So thank you for focusing us all and keeping us moving in a good way. We all have something to learn. I have a lot to learn. So thank you so much for those words. And I would echo other council members and chairmen as they say how we can assist those assembly bills as they move forward. We're happy to do so. Thank you.
Oh, shooter. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
I love your smile. Thank you, and thank you for remembering me. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I've just got new hearing aids, and so I hear myself speak, but Courtney was telling me I'm not speaking as loud as I used to. So the important thing is I don't want to waste my time and waste yours as well. But congratulations, and I'm happy to see you in the leadership role. It's been a privilege to come across our paths. I am thinking of you in the sense that years ago when I first met you, I told you about a story my mother had written about old Indian woman looking for the oranges and walking all the way to your part of the country to find that. And so one of the things that I've learned over the years with the work that I do, we get very dirty, but it is the blood of our ancestors and the bones of our ancestors that is in that dirt. So regardless of where it's at, it's a privilege to touch that. But we must get dirty in order to understand it. I don't know that that makes sense to a lot of people, but one of the words that I'm hearing more and more, and it is beginning to concern me, is the blatant ignorance that we have. So one of the things I'm going to ask in the research is that we start looking at the beginning of the laws, how the federal law negated the Native Americans and how the California laws fed off of that. Hopefully that'll give us a good base of history and looking at those laws and how they were changed to accommodate people's wants and dislikes, and most importantly, those who are so greedy for a lot of money. I think our environment is key to our well-being and our mental health. And so you, as an example within the assembly there and your leadership in the state of California, perhaps we can address those issues and make it a healthier state to live in. Thank you. I'm so humbled to see you and to be able to talk to you. Thank you.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Carmen. Thank you for those words.
Any other council members would like to weigh in? Okay, then we will go ahead and move on to our regular business. Thank you so much for joining us, Assembly Member. Really wonderful words, such an honor to have you here, and keep on doing the good work that you've been doing. We all support you and are just so excited to see one of our own in the legislature. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for all those kind words. Continue to keep us lifted up in your prayers. It's a journey like no other, being in the state legislature and tackling all these issues. So thank you for your kind words.
Wonderful. So we will now move on to approval of the minutes. Hi, Assembly Member. So if you could all take a look, you should have gotten these last week. If there are any amendments, could you all give me a quick nod so that I can open up the Word documents? Okay, no amendments, it looks like. Oh, you have some amendments. Okay.
I didn't catch it until just now. The meeting of February 26th. I am not listed as present, but I believe I was present.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other amendments to, we'll take the February 1st. No further amendments to the February 1st minutes. Can we get a motion to approve those?
I'll move. Kenny Khan.
I'll second.
And that was Councilmember Myers with the second. Any council member comments? Any public comment on just the minutes?
No hands raised.
Great. Then we will do a roll call vote. Councilmember Khan.
Yes.
Councilmember Kessler-Mata?
Yes.
Councilmember Macaro?
Yes.
Councilmember Burris?
Yes.
Councilmember Roberts?
Yes.
Councilmember Bohorquez?
Yes.
Councilmember Harper?
Yes.
Councilmember Myers? And we are not skipping you, Councilmember Giovanetti, but you are not voting for this meeting. So we will go to Councilmember Elliott Santos.
Yes.
Councilmember Lucas.
I sustain.
Okie doke. We have an abstention from Councilmember Lucas, as she was not present. And Councilmember Phelps.
Yes.
Motion carries, and the February minutes are approved. April minutes, any amendments on those? Or approved as amended, sorry.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes.
That's the motion from Councilmember Bohorquez.
I'll second.
And the second from Councilmember Phelps. Sorry. Virtual voting sounds a lot like bidding, so I have to make sure that we get it for the record. So we'll do any council member comments? Any public comment?
No hands raised.
Okie doke, we'll do roll call vote. Council member Khan?
Yes.
Council member Kessler-Mata?
Yes.
Council member Macaro?
Yes.
Councilmember Burris?
Yes.
Councilmember Roberts?
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm having some issues with my audio, so I'm trying to get that fixed. My apologies.
And so what was your vote on that?
Yes, sorry.
Councilmember Bohorquez?
Yes.
Councilmember Harper?
Yes.
Councilmember Myers?
Abstain.
Abstains. Councilmember Elliott Santos?
Yes.
Councilmember Lucas?
Abstain.
Abstains. Councilmember Phelps?
Yes.
Motion carries and the April minutes are approved. We will finalize with the February with amendments and then finalize the April, and those will be posted to the website for public review. We'll now go to any council member updates. This is where any of you can share any meetings you've had, any updates with the group, relevant to the work of this council. And you can go ahead and jump right in as long as you're not talking over each other. Okay, we'll move on from that then. Before we get to the review of these number of documents, I would like to move up Subcommittee 10A since we need action for that. And if we don't get to it, I want to make sure we do get to it. And so as a reminder, you all created a subcommittee for funding partnerships. This means in outside funding sources. So for example, you know, the Mackenzie Scotts of the world who are funding stuff like this, but also other smaller philanthropic organizations to fund things that the state is unable to fund or to fund actions that you recommend at a later date. Right now, staff is in the process of putting together an agreement, more of a memorandum of understanding with Decolonizing Wealth Project, which is an Indigenous philanthropic organization who's gonna help us convene funders for the purposes of this council and at the direction of this council and at the direction of that subcommittee. So what we'd like to do is staff that subcommittee in anticipation of a meeting that is happening in the next few weeks. So that we have everyone at the table that needs to be there. And so we'll need two council members to be nominated. We could do three, but two is preferred.
Christina, if I could ask a quick question. Is our part of our goal with the subcommittees also to make sure that there is diversity between either North and South? So, yeah, I mean, like regional diversity as well as recognized and unrecognized. Do we have any set goals around those?
I think it's up to the council. And so in this space, what would be particularly helpful, I think, is having people who have some background in private funding and philanthropic funding and obtaining that kind of funding. And then also in this space, it is helpful to have people who can be effective spokespeople for the council. So that's just something to think about, because part of what this subcommittee will be doing will be meeting with the group convened by Decolonizing Wealth Project to talk about the work of the council, the things that can be funded, and the things that where there's still critical needs. Councilmember Myers.
I like giving money. Can I nominate myself?
For sure, you can nominate yourself.
Sweet.
I'm also happy to self-nominate.
Great, we have two nominees. Is anybody else wanting to nominate themselves, or is everybody okay with this slate?
Can I just also say that we are finding in the academic subcommittee, it is really helpful to have alternates as well. Like, I mean, on the alternate on the academic subcommittee, there's so much work that, you know, I feel like it's great to have extra hands, you know, even if it's kind of just more informal.
Or if there's someone who wants to drop in to be a spokesperson as needed, that's also helpful. We'll give it five more seconds. Oh, Councilmember Lucas?
Yeah, I think Mark should be part of that. Mark, are you willing to put yourself out there?
Willingness is not the issue. Spread too thin, too many irons in the fire.
Yeah, but you know what? You come across with all the really pizzazz that we really need to have out there. So you're not going to take no from me.
Your wisdom is greater than all of ours combined.
I know you too well. Don't say no.
Oh boy, Carmen. How can you refuse that? As an alternate, I will volunteer because Carmen just, Okay. Thank you, Carmen.
Pick your battles, Mark.
Great. So we've got a slate of the two council members, Myers and Kessler-Mata, with an alternative council member, Macaro, for the funding subcommittee. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved, Kenny Khan.
Motion by Councilmember Khan.
I'll second.
Sorry, that was Harper.
That's fine.
Okay, we'll give Harper the second. Since Councilmember Lucas got an appointment on that committee. So we'll do, is there any further council discussion? Any public comment specific to the motion? James?
Sorry, no hands up.
Thank you. So we'll do a roll call vote. Councilmember Khan?
Yes.
Councilmember Kessler-Mata?
Yes.
Councilmember Macaro?
Can I abstain?
Sure.
Okay, I vote yes. It's kind of a joke.
Okay.
trying to keep it light.
Councilmember Burris?
Yes.
Councilmember Roberts?
Yes.
Councilmember Vivarquez?
Yes.
Councilmember Harper?
Yes.
Councilmember Myers?
Yes.
Councilmember Elliot Santos?
Yes.
Councilmember Lucas?
Yes.
And Councilmember Phelps?
Yes.
Motion carries and the funding subcommittee is staffed. Thank you all for allowing me to have that quick action, and then we'll move back into the documents. So we're going to just go through these documents. You're not expected to engage on them. If you'd like to, you can just jump in and say that we need some edits, but we'll really just be doing a read through. If there are edits that you think need to happen, let me know and we'll redline it as we go. But we'll also provide you with Word copies of this if you'd like to have any staff or any of your counsel take a look at, and legal counsel, I mean, take a look at these for any edits or anything in the interim. What we'll do is you'll have these, we'll get any feedback, comments, edits for the next meeting. We may do another round of this, and I have a raised hand from Chairman Macaro.
Your offer for Word documents, I would appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okie doke. And just let us know. We can also just share them with all of you. And then if you do want to engage, we'd prefer redline, just so that we can see where edits were made. And then what we'll do is if it seems like we need to go back through again the amendments, we'll do that again with redline documents provided to you before the next meeting. If it seems like all of the amendments are minimal, then we'll just finalize documents for vote for next meeting. So that's just kind of the process. So I'm going to go ahead and open. There's actually four documents that are covered under these items. And again, these are just a best shot at what we think the council might need. If it's totally off base, let us know and we will go back to square one. But wanted to have something for all of you to work with. And I will share my screen in just a moment. So we're starting on public engagement. So there's both a public engagement policy, which is more of like a legal policy document. And then there's also a guide for public engagement for the use of the council. So we'll start with the public engagement policy, and then the guide for public engagement translates it into a workable document. So go ahead and share my screen at this time, if I have that ability. Okay. We'll zoom in a bit and minimize. Okay. So at any time, I am not able to see people's faces. So if you'd like to jump in, feel free to just jump in. But so this policy establishes the California Truth and Healing Council policy with respect to public engagement by council members and authorized representatives. Authorized representatives is later defined, but it's really because we anticipate that there may be some contracting for communications, and so wanted to make sure that this applied to those folks as well. It's designed to ensure all council members and authorized representatives are aware of and comply with applicable policies, laws, and ethical standards when engaging with the public. This policy applies to all council members and authorized representatives invited to participate or speak in their official capacity, and that should be capitalized, at public events, okay, or for the purposes of publication of any kind. And capitalized terms are all defined, so that's why they're like that. This policy applies to all public engagements not under the purview of the council, including but not limited to public speaking, media requests, and social media. So basically any outside engagements that the council isn't affiliated with. Authorized representatives means any individual or entity duly authorized by the council or staff to speak on behalf of the council. Council members, this is a joint definition from the bylaws. So tribal leaders and representatives duly appointed by the tribal advisor pursuant to the executive order and the charter as voting and alternate voting members of the council, and any duly appointed or elected non-voting representatives, if and when that happens. The office is the office headed by the tribal advisor within the office of the governor pursuant to this section of the government code. And official capacity means capacity in which it's actually hanging. The participation of a council member or authorized representative is for the primary purpose of representing the interests of the council rather than the individual's separate role or expertise on a particular subject matter. The invitation to engage or an offer of compensation is extended by a person or entity with interests that may be affected substantially by the individual's performance of their council duties. The information conveyed draws substantially on non-public information or information obtained in the course of the individual's council duties, or the subject concerns any ongoing or announced council initiatives, policies, missions, or issues. Personal capacity means capacity in which the participation of a council member or authorized representative is not directly related to the accomplishment of the council's initiatives, policies, missions, or issues. And again, this is a little bit fudgy given that all of you are within the tribal community and lead in the tribal community. So there is a bit of a gray area, and we're always able to help if there's ever a question. Publication means anything made public by print, as in a newspaper, magazine, pamphlet, letter, telegram, or computer. Well, this might be a dated definition, but we'll just keep that. A lot of it is probably via internet, but or orally or by broadcast, radio, podcast, television. Public event means any event, meeting, or forum attended by the public, one in which the intent is to communicate a message, educate a community, celebrate an occasion, or share information with wide audiences about the individual's official duties, council initiatives, policies, missions, or issues, which reasonably may be expected to be documented via minutes, notes, media recordings, et cetera, by attendees. May include, but is not limited to, private events, by invitation only events, and closed door forums, and does not include meetings with the individual's respective tribe or tribal community, and meetings or informal mechanisms of the council. Staff means the office of the tribal advisor and any other personnel or contractors secured to assist the council in its work. I'm gonna put a comment here because authorized representatives are included in here, so we need to explain that. So we'll go back to that. And then the tribal advisor is the tribal advisor. Are there any questions on definitions or anything at this point? Chairman Macaro has a raised hand.
Yeah, I'm wondering, the frame or the paradigm of what is it? It's personal or official capacity, right? Mm-hmm. Is that a legal frame? Because I could see potentially official, personal, or elective or professional, at least in some of our cases on this council, we hold elective office with our tribes and sometimes are asked to make public comment on one thing or another. and then others are faculty members. And so is there a third category, or does that fall under the heading of personal? Because I can think of instances where people really don't care what I think personally, but in my elective capacity representing my tribe, they might care what I think. So I don't know. I'm not really offering up anything. It's a legitimate question.
No, I think that's wonderful feedback, and we'll think about how to address that. Because this was modeled off of a federal government type of policy, which probably doesn't contemplate the fact that people are representatives or potentially serving it in other roles. So we'll take a look at what might be, because I think personal would envision that, but it also doesn't quite capture what Chairman, you're saying. So we'll take a look at that and see if we can address that.
Yeah, just trying to keep, I don't know if there's a need to keep us, I guess this is about keeping us in our lane. If we proceed, it's important to know the context that participation and comments might be made in. Otherwise, lines are easily very, very blurred. So, and hopefully not on purpose. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments at this time? Okay. So the policy. It is the policy of the council to encourage council members and authorized representatives to engage in public events and publication opportunities in an official capacity for the common public interest and benefit as a means of keeping the public informed of council initiatives, policies, missions, and issues. Office of the Tribal Advisor Notice and Approval. Council members and authorized representatives must notify and receive approval from the Office of the Tribal Advisor prior to speaking in an official capacity at public events or for the purposes of publication. And again, this is anything that's just related to the Truth and Healing Council. Council members and authorized representatives should notify the Office of the Tribal Advisor upon receipt of requests to speak at public events or for the purposes of publication within a recommended 2 weeks notice in advance of the public event or publication engagement. As last minute requests may not have sufficient time to undergo approvals. And so part of this is sometimes the governor's office may want to send governor's office comm staff with you to help support. And we've had times where they'll, you know, listen in some of the conversations to make sure that they can add any, you know, any type of support that they can have, and then also amplify whatever it is that we are putting out there. So that's the internal approvals. And you'll see in the process too, we would also want time to be able to help staff you for this. Councilmember Myers has a raised hand.
Notify in writing or any sort of notification?
I am okay with any sort of notification, but if you want to say in writing, just so we have it for the record, that's fine too. But we can also clarify. Is there a preference of council members?
Preference. I was just wondering, you know, if we called and said, hey, we're doing this thing, you're like, okay, good, that's going to cover us, or do we need like an official email chain notifying of who we're talking to? And
I mean, I'm good with a call or a text or, you know, a quick email. And part of this is, you know, within the process, once we get notice, we'll want to have some questions about who it is, just so that we make sure we're not having, you know, counsel speak in front of people who are have discriminatory views or who have weird political views that could be ascribed to the council. So I think it's more like giving us a heads up so that we can run some flags is good enough for us. But I can clarify this a bit more just so that, and there's another raised hand, Councilmember Kessler-Mata.
Yeah, so I think it's probably not specifically on the same question, but there are potential, you know, folks that are coming in with already pre-existing relations with media orgs, specifically like doing documentaries on them or whatever it is the issues that their tribes are facing. And so does that, how do we account for that? Or, I mean, this is not my personal situation, so I, you know, don't know how to phrase it exactly, but I don't know if this document allows for that or makes it clear that they need to disclose it or what kind of role that may have.
Yeah, and I think under this, and I can also just make that a note in case it's not clear. So I'll just add. But we would envision that something like that, you'd need to, again, if we've got a big section on personal capacity, but if it were something that wasn't for the sole purpose of the council and it was kind of just a ride along type of deal, that maybe had the council like in it, but wasn't a main feature, we'd still kind of want a heads up on that. And then also a disclaimer, just because we don't want any kind of situation with, sorry, I'm trying to figure out where to insert it. Oh, I'm in the wrong space. We don't want a situation where like one of the council members has a documentary made and then leverages all of you and ascribes their viewpoints to all of you or to the council itself in a way that is not aligned with the mission or with your personal or professional viewpoints. So pre-existing.
Christina,
yes.
This is Joe. I was thinking that some of the activity of our council members could the things we're working on are tribal issues. They would naturally, there could be a sort of a natural synergy of whatever people are doing with their, you know, their tribal governments behind the scenes to advocate on certain issues for their people. But that such advocacy should not color or create any discomfort for any of our fellow council persons who are part of this Truth and Healing Council. That synergy Absolutely. Should not be something that creates like an awkwardness or some kind of legal exposure or some wrath from somebody.
Absolutely. And so again, part of putting this in place is to make sure that if anything does happen, we have sort of a way to deal with it. But again, all of you are here voluntarily, taking your time and your reputations and everything that you carry with you. And we want to just make sure that, you know, no one is taking advantage of that in, you know, any way. So again, we did put kind of a, like, if you're working with your tribe and they want to hear updates and they want to have a presentation within your general council meeting, or they want to understand how their tribe can plug in, like that's something that, you know, you can do and that's fine. And, you know, we can help provide you with talking points on that. But again, it's, if we have a situation, for example, where, you know, you're going to your tribe and you're expressing that in your role as this council member, you're going to advocate for the tribe's, you know, personal priorities, then we have a little bit of a situation there. So just putting that out there. Okay, endorsement is generally prohibited. And so This a lot of this stuff becomes clear when it actually becomes clear, and you don't see it until you see it. And so stuff like this, you know, there may be events that ask for council endorsement. There may be tribes that ask for endorsement for purposes of, you know, legal mechanisms, other things like that. And this is just, you know, basically no endorsement unless it's duly authorized by the council or applicable law, regulation, policy, or procedure. Chairman Macaro, you had a question?
Not yet. It will ripen perhaps when you finish. Let me see.
And then there's some cases where, you know, endorsement could mean, well, I lost my train of thought, so I'll just read it and then it'll come back to me. Council members and authorized representatives do not officially endorse or appear to endorse any public event, publication, position, tribal entity, product, service, or enterprise unless duly authorized pursuant to typical law, regulation, policy, or procedure, which means that you could actually adopt a procedure under the council that would allow for endorsement if you wanted to do so. So this wouldn't apply to that. But council members and authorized representatives must ensure that neither their participation in a public event or publication, nor the content of any statements made in any way may be interpreted as an endorsement of any unauthorized public event, publication, position, tribal entity, product, service, or enterprise. Again, this is also like there's filmmakers, there's comms people, there's, you know, same thing where, you know, there was a situation under the Trump administration where people kept, you know, putting Ivanka's jewelry line up as something that people should buy. That's something you shouldn't be doing in your official capacity, private capacity, okay, elected capacity, you know, you outrank all of us, so we can't tell you what to do. But in the truth and healing capacity, just no endorsements. And then council members and authorized representatives shall not use official titles or council affiliations to suggest official endorsement or preferential treatment. And now you have a question, Chairman.
Okay, I guess I'm it makes sense the way you explained it, but before hearing you explain it, I didn't read it that way. Because from a tribal leader standpoint, sometimes we're asked to endorse things in local politics and state politics and in federal politics, maybe certain bills, maybe, you know, ballot initiatives, I don't know, hypothetically perhaps. So the example you gave from the previous presidential administration was not one I was thinking about, but that was interesting nonetheless. So is there a way to, I don't know, narrow this down or endorsement of something that we do as council members or some subject matter of the council?
Yeah. What it's sounding like to me is that it's, we need to make it clearer that when you're acting in your official capacity for the council, that you are not endorsing, because that's really all of this part is what it's applying to. Because we know that you will take positions as tribal council members, as also just individuals and also in other spaces. And so we'll just clarify that this is just for like when you're acting in an official capacity, and then what that kind of means in a more targeted way.
Yeah, and let me dial in my concern. You know, those of us that are elected politically and have constituents, you know, the milieu that we operate in is political, part and parcel by definition, just to be redundant. So being political, I mean, we endorse things. People ask us to endorse things. So and I actually don't think about it much as endorsing, but, you know, reading this, I'm thinking, well, you know, much of what we do in any given week or month is endorsing or being asked to endorse. will you support this? Will you sign this? Would you put your name here? You know, and so this could be problematic if somebody wanted to create a gotcha moment or something like that as well. So if you could box that in a little more, I wish I had some suggestions for how, but it is really broad otherwise.
Absolutely. We will tailor that a bit more. Councilmember Myers?
Yeah, I had a question on the endorsement as well, not to the specific connection, but as we were talking about today, AB 338, the assembly member we're talking about, is because we don't have an official like policy, can we endorse whatever we want, however we want right now?
I mean, you shouldn't. And the things you said earlier, we will interpret as being in your individual capacities as members of the tribal community. But see, here's where it gets a little, you know, and it may be that you want to have a policy in place at some point for when you want to take official action to endorse, as you discussed earlier about, you know, there are groups that want support for certain things, or if there's like a policy that, you know, an agency does that's pro tribal land return, you might want to say, hey, we actually support this. So I think we just need to tailor this a bit more to make it more common sense, and then also more tailored to the exact situations that we're looking at, which are more like a, you know, using your people using affiliation with the council to for pretty much material benefit or other benefit.
Okay.
And then council member.
That was helpful, by the way, to me. I like that.
Good. And then, sorry, I can't read this one. Let's see if I can pull it up.
I think it's Giovanetti.
Oh, Councilmember Giovanetti.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, maybe in some circumstances, you know, we can protect ourselves from overstating the council's considerations or intentions or long-range thinking about certain matters by saying, by just giving a disclaimer that, of course, no one of us speaks for the council. And that's, you know, there are so many obvious areas that would be borderline criminal for us not to consider in seeking truth and healing for our California tribal peoples.
Thank you, council member. Council member Kessler Mata. I know you hate that I call you that, but it's a deference and respect.
Well, no, it's all right. Sorry. So I think with regards to the endorsement, I think it's right that we do need a little bit of clarification. But I wonder if, for example, I mean, just to add to the murkiness, right? So if I go and talk to a given, right, whether it's a small class or, you know, an event on my campus, right, where I've been asked to speak about these types of issues, because this is kind of all the buzz, right? I'm not going in, technically in my official capacity, but the school may, you know, I often don't have control over what kind of posters people create, just like everybody else here probably doesn't. And so they list on their council member, you know, of the California Truth and Healing Council. So I've not vetted that. They do that. I go, I speak. I can make a disclaimer, right? Like, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of the California Truth and Healing Council. This is my my professor hat or whatever. But is that sufficient? Because here it kind of seems like it may not be.
I mean, like, there's a certain extent to which you can't control how other people use your name and your affiliation. Like, I am on 5 million agendas that I'm not even aware I've been invited to. And so I, you know, I think, like, and all of you probably have seen that in multiple areas as well. So I think, you know, we could put actually something to, like, you know, where it's like, clarify where practicable or something like that, where council member has ability to clarify agendas.
Yeah, kind of somewhat similarly, I think it might just be that we do need clarity around actionable endorsements. The only endorse, like, we just need to say, you know, endorsements must be made at the full council level in a, you know, in a full meeting, among one of our meetings, because I think this reminds me of the time in the listening session when someone asked us to endorse or sign on to their petition or whatever it was. And so that is the type of thing that if we had an avenue or a way to bring that back to the council and say, so, you know, somebody from our listening session has raised this issue and it's our responsibility to bring it back right to the council. I mean, it kind of creates that responsibility. And then we have to kind of address it here. But at the very least, articulating in this document that there is a course of action for official endorsement, and that that's the only way that things can get officially endorsed.
Okay, great. I love that. Great comments. Another council member raised their hand, and I can also not read it.
Myers still has his hand raised. And
so maybe he just went, they both went off camera. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. And Councilmember Myers, do you have anything to add or?
No, I was just staying in the queue if I wanted to hop in at whatever time. I'll put my hand.
Great. Okay. And I think we can also clarify with examples, because here we have actual people that we can say, like, you know, tribal council member acting in a capacity for a tribe doesn't apply here, but we'll work on the language to make it more clear. Non-discrimination, this is like what I mentioned earlier, is that we won't approve engagement with public events or publications associated with individuals, entities, or organizations that restrict membership based on race, creed, color, nationality, sexual orientation, or gender, and whose constitution, bylaws, membership qualifications, or ritual are withheld from the general public. And this is just basically like, there are certain organizations that you all know that we probably will not give our sign off on. And so if you do engage, we're not gonna own that one. Media engagement should be coordinated with the Office of the Tribal Advisor, who will consult with the appropriate communications staff for guidance and approval prior to authorizing engagement. Council members were authorized representatives with the media. And this is a bit clearer in the process about how that works. And Councilmember Myers, you raised your hand. Again, okay.
Yeah, that was legitimate. For the non-discrimination, is it just silly that, do we need to exclude tribes, or is that just, that's not, you don't need to worry about that?
I think let's add that, because I did have that kind of flag in my brain a bit. So let's just add it just for clarity, just because you're gonna need to talk to tribes a lot.
And possibly endorse some if we need to.
Yeah, but let's clarify here. Because also we're not gonna set up a situation where the state's gonna be asking individual tribes for their membership criteria to see if you guys can go speak to them. Okay. And then you said, what was the second one you said? I'm sorry.
Oh, that was it. I had another one. No, we'll keep moving.
Okay. Personal capacity. When engaging with the public in a personal capacity, council members and authorized representatives should adhere to the following practices and the council code of conduct. Council code of conduct, you may see later, or we may hit time, so you can review on your own time and we'll review next meeting. Disclaimer required when engaging in a personal capacity, so all other capacities other than official, and so we can also clarify the other capacities. Council members and authorized representatives may not permit the use of their official title, council name, or any vestige of the authority of the council. Again, we'll clarify, this is like where practicable, because you can't control all situations. And unfortunately, gotchas are quite common nowadays, it seems. So we'll try to make this clearer. Okay. Official title and council name, among other biographical details, may be used provided they're not given any more prominence than any other details set forth in the individual's biography. Council specific information is used in a biography and the subject of the public event or publication deals significantly with any ongoing or announced council initiatives, policies, missions, or issues. Council members and authorized representatives must make the disclaimer that the views presented are theirs and do not necessarily represent the views of the council. Disclaimers may be provided orally as long as they're done at the beginning of the engagement. Endorsement is generally prohibited. So when speaking in a personal capacity, council members or authorized representatives may only endorse individuals or entities only if the council member or authorized representative has not associated their council affiliation with their engagement with a public event or publication. So we'll make this clear that when you're in your personal capacity, you actually can endorse as long as it's clear that you're not acting in your capacity. When speaking in an official capacity, endorsement is generally prohibited. Office of the Tribal Advisor Review. Council members and authorized representatives may request review and clearance of planned remarks that will be delivered in their personal capacity from the Office of the Tribal Advisor to ensure compliance with this policy. That's not required, but if you want to check, we're happy to take a look. Use of council funds or official time prohibited. Council members and authorized representatives may not use council funds, resources, or official personnel or duty time to support personal endeavors. Exceptions, note that there may be exceptions to the above practices that may apply regarding teaching at certain types of institutions of higher learning or when preparing publications or presentations for professional associations. So there's always exceptions. So we'll add a couple more in there. And then approval, although approval of the Office of Tribal Advisors is not required, council members and authorized representatives may notify the office out of an abundance of caution. And then social media, we included this so that you can kind of figure out the parameters here. The requirements, practices, and principles in this policy apply to the use of social and digital media. In addition, council members should adhere to the following principles: maintaining confidentiality. Only publicly available information should be posted. Confidential information obtained in the course of work performed with the council should remain confidential to the extent provided by applicable law. Maintaining professionalism. Council members and authorized representatives should refrain from engaging in arguments or debates when posting in an official capacity. Council members and authorized representatives may respond factually to substantive questions, but should not engage in policy debates. And this is in your official capacity. We all know that you're going to do this in your elected capacities or as academics. Council content. Council members and authorized representatives may repost official communications, statements, and media from the Office of the Tribal Advisor or authorized contractors and should work with the Office of Tribal Advisor or other authorized contractors if they seek to create new content. The Office of the Tribal Advisor or authorized contractors will maintain and share content via social media kits as needed. And this is like if there's big pushes happening or we're gearing up on our social media engagement, we'll be sharing, you know, kind of shared drives basically for things that you can share and you can just copy and paste and have that go out. Councilmember Myers.
So when we're reposting something or retweeting something and we add a quote to it that may not be 100% consistent with like the line of the Truth and Healing Council, do we go back to the other portion of this policy and say, this is my own opinion, but comment you want to retweet, or are we good with it?
I would say for purposes of this council, it's probably fine, but we'll clarify that. Because social media is a bit different in how people react to it.
I just don't want to waste my words, my tweets saying this is my official capacity.
Well, one thing that people do, at least in government, is at least on their personal or, you know, other Twitter or handle or whatever the kids are using these days, they they'll have it just in their bio that, you know, tweets are my own. And that, again, should be sufficient. I think if we create actual like Truth and Healing Council handles for you, that would be a bit different. But right now there's a bit of a fudgy space where you don't actually have those yet. So we'll think about how to address any sort of elaborative comments that you have if you're retweeting or anything. I'll say I like all of your posts so far, so approved.
I'll take it. And then I had one other question, but I can wait till we get to the very end.
Okay. And we have Council Member
Giovanetti.
Great, thank you. I only see council member, so I'll say council member dot 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 because that's all I can see. Council member Giovanetti.
Yeah, I want to say that for academics, it can be a little bit tricky because depending on the context, where we go back and forth between being the first line of defense or being the last to defend, only because people have been so slow to take up the task of telling the truth about California Indian history. You know, so we get to break the bad news to people. Sometimes it's even our own people in university classes. But that can make it a little bit tricky, you know, but I don't think it's anything that can't be, you know, dealt with.
Great point. And I think if there is an academic angle here, if you all want to take a bit of a pen to it, we definitely appreciate that perspective. Council Member Kessler Mata.
I just wanted to mention that I think Chief Sisk is in the attendees log right now. And so I don't know if she's supposed to be in the panelists page.
Okay.
Just let me try and find her real quick.
But yeah, we can look at that issue on the academic subcommittee too.
Great. Okay. Then James will work on that piece. And then third party content. Council members and authorized representatives should only share, retweet, and repost content that relates to the council's mission and charge. And this is again in your official capacity. So I should make that clear. Doing this on a small laptop screen is a bit challenging. Okay. And again, sharing mission-related content, including from partners, other state, tribal, or federal entities or organizations is acceptable. Before sharing or posting anything with a link, council members and authorized representatives should check the entire content. And this is in case there's anything inflammatory or anything that actually isn't supposed to be there. Council Member Myers, I know you maybe had a question on this.
I did. I don't know if we need to add it someplace here or it's covered, but the question was, who do we get in trouble with? Or what are what are the penalties for violating portions of this policy? And I was just articles of incorporation and bylaws. But where does it fall within that?
That's a good point, because we have penalties for other stuff. Loretta and I will think about that a bit and see, because here I would say it'll depend, right? So let's think about that, because really, ideally, we kind of deal with it and everybody does it, everything the way they're supposed to do, but you don't write policies based on people doing the right thing. Great point. And we will think about what would be appropriate for something like this and not like over the top, because if there's anything majorly inflammatory, you know, it could be the subject of removal, or even like, depending on what it is, you know, as Council Member Giovanetti mentioned, you know, criminal or other issues. If it's just like, you know, you're arguing with someone on Facebook, then we might just say, don't do that anymore and pull the comments, or ask you to pull the comments. So
And I think my concern also comes from, you know, if there are people in the state that may think a council member has done something, you know, that violates this policy to, you know, the removal degree, you know, what's the process for moving forward with as a complaint, which was another question, whether we should have some portion of this be a complaint process for the general public who may see something that you may not see something or someone else doesn't see, that wanted to say, hey, Councilor Myers, you know, did this thing in this public. He said he was from the Truth and Healing Council and it was crazy and I want to say something about it.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And so in the code of conduct, we have a whole process for all of you, for the governing council, given that, you know, we think that you all, we picked you for a reason and we think that you should have the ability to defend yourselves in spaces. I think that process could work for what you were saying, where it's, you know, people are reporting and then we want to have kind of a back and forth and figure out what's going on there. But we'll think about how to marry that with this policy as well, whether it's like referencing it or just like including that piece in here too.
Sweet, thank you.
Thanks. And then amendments are upon a majority vote, and that if we have amendments, we'll give them to you 10 calendar days in advance of the meeting at which you will vote. Any additional comments on this? Okay. I know we're like about halfway through the time with public comments and 3 hours is a bit of a chunk. Do folks want to take a quick 5-minute break? Yes. Okay. So we'll see you at 2:40. So we'll be right back. So what we'll do at this point, we've still got a few more documents. So we'll go through one more document, which is pretty short, which is the public, what did we call it? Guide to Public Engagement, and that'll walk you through what our proposed process for council members is. Councilmember Bohorquez, would you like to speak?
I just had a quick question. When you send out the Word versions for us, is that going to have the edits in which you created right now so that we can just continue upon editing it?
Yep.
If not, could you do it that way for us? Please.
Thing. So then that means with the Word docs, we'll probably send it Monday or Tuesday, just so that we can think about it a bit and do some wordsmithing. And then we'll send it out with the comments so that you can build on top of it. Okay. And what we'll do is we'll redline those proposed edits as well, so you can see where we tried to make changes to accommodate the comments. Okay, so we'll go through very quickly this engagement process, and then the other two documents, we will send those to you just in Word with any additional edits that we kind of catch before next week, and then you can just take a look at those on your own time, and next meeting we'll start with those two documents and then go back to any edits that you might have on the other two. Okay. Draft guide, okay. So this is a more practical guide for speaking engagements for council members. So So we've broken it up into media requests and other speaking requests. So if you're contacted by media, you can forward it to this email. And that isn't live yet, so don't do that yet. But it'll be live later today. I'll make it. So, and then you can respond to the sender by CCing that email as well to thank them for the invite and inform them that staff will handle the request. Staff will then work through the internal review and approvals process and will let you know if you should engage further. Typically, if it's a good ask, what we'll want to do is help prep you. If it's a weird ask, we'll let you know that it's a weird ask and say that you should probably not engage further. For other speaking requests, and this is requests for the council specifically, you can forward them to the info email. And that includes requests to speak at public events like conferences, brown bag presentations, college classes, or anything you're doing in your official capacity as a council member where you'll be identified as such. So if you've been specifically asked to talk about the progress of the council, you know, let us know and then we can help staff you on that. Considering invitations, the first step is to consider whether you're gonna do it or whether you'd like to do it. So you can talk with your advisors and any other staff and challenge yourself to come up with a good reason to speak rather than having no good reasons to speak or no good reasons not to speak, sorry. It's always okay to politely decline speaking invitations. So ask yourself some of these questions. Am I available? Am I the subject matter expert? Can I speak with authority on this topic? Is there someone else on the council or another entity better positioned to speak with authority on this topic? Are there other requests or other council representatives already attending who could support this request? Does the council have anything new to say about the topic? Who's the audience, not just the organizer? Consider the attendees. Who are they? Are they part of an audience the council would like to reach? What does the event organizer want or expect? What do we want? Why do we want to speak? Do I have time to get this approved? Allow at least 14 days for approval and staff support. Is there a conflict of interest or the appearance of a conflict of interest speaking at this event? And you can refer the council code of conduct. Does the sponsor do business or seek to do business with the council? Should I do this event in my personal capacity? Let's put or other. If you're not familiar with the organization issuing the invitation or with the particular event at which you have been invited to speak, you can also reach out to our office to discuss further. Official versus personal capacity. So when receiving an invitation to speak, you need to decide if you want to do the event in your official or personal capacity. We should probably make this consistent, but we'll put a note. Okay, official capacity. You'll participate as a council member and discuss the work you do on behalf of the council. You'll share information and positions authorized by the council that you have insight on based on your serving as a council member. If it's your personal capacity, you didn't receive the invitation because of your role as a council member, but because of your expertise in the subject or your role outside of the council, you won't be representing the council. You'll refrain from discussing any official work you do on the council. You can provide general public overview information about the council. And direct people to the council's website if they would like to learn more information or get in contact with the council. Getting approval when speaking in your official capacity. If you and the Office of the Tribal Advisor decide this is a good opportunity for you and the council, reach out to the event host and ask them the following questions. You'll need this information for the approval process. Who's sponsoring the event? Why do they want you or the council to participate? Who else is on the agenda? Who would be speaking right before and after you? Will there be press at the event or at this specific session? And is the panel or round, if it is a panel or roundtable, who are the other participants? Who's the moderator and what questions will be asked? Once you've determined you have good reasons to speak and have decided to accept the invitation, you have to get approval from the Office of the Tribal Advisor to participate. Upon approval, the Office of the Tribal Advisor will work with you to provide you with materials and talking points specific to your engagement. Social media. We encourage you to engage with social and digital media in your capacity as a council member with the following reminders. Only post publicly available information. Don't argue, debate, or bully others. You can respond factually to substantive questions as long as back and forth discussions do not become heated. Only share, retweet, or repost content that relates to council mission and charge. Well, we'll clarify this. And then before sharing or posting anything with a link, make sure you've read the whole article or page you're linking to in case there's offensive or inaccurate material. You're welcome to repost official communication statements and media from the office, and staff can always work with you to create new content. Our office will also maintain and share content via social media kits as needed. Guidelines for speaking in your personal capacity. When engaging in a personal capacity, you should not use your membership on the council or the council name to identify yourself or promote the event or publication. You can use your title and council affiliation in conjunction with your speaking activities, but only if provided as one of a number of other biographical details. And you need to give a disclaimer that you're not speaking on behalf of the council or in your capacity as a council member. Bottom line is that it should be clear that you're not representing the council when speaking in your personal or other capacity. You can include your council membership or the council's name in your bio if that's included on the conference website, but you can't be listed on the agenda as this person, council member. And we'll clarify this based on the feedback we got today. And then, when in doubt, you can always contact our office to check whether a public engagement should be done in your personal or official capacity. Councilmember Myers?
Is there any thought that of including kind of blanket approvals for certain publications or reporters that we have in good contact with that we know support the council?
Yeah, let's do that. There's also going to be situations, and maybe we can clarify this too, where we will help you with op-eds, and we'll want to ask whether you want to be someone who would be that person. And so that, again, we can include that as well. So good flag. Councilmember Kessler-Mata?
Yeah, so would PowerPoint, for official capacity events, would PowerPoints and other materials that we produce ourselves need to be vetted or approved? Because I'm thinking back to the UN one, like I didn't have you guys see my PowerPoint before. And technically that was official capacity.
I would think, hold on. We might want to take a quick look. If it's pulled from already publicly available materials, like that's probably not going to be an issue for us. I think it's where, you know, there's any sort of creative hand put into there. We may want to take a look. So I'm going to work that in there. Again, we also have capacity constraints, so I don't want to like make this overly burdensome where you're actually trying to do good work. But approvals review needed. But again, we also want to make sure that there's not anything weird going in some of these presentations, so, which none of you will do, but just in case. And then ideally, we also have presentations ready to go once you're starting to kind of gear up on these as well. Additional questions, comments, things that need to be added here? Okay. This is always the part of the meeting where things get slower. So I'm going to stop sharing. And if you have additional comments and questions, feel free to add them when we send out the Word docs, or if you just have thoughts, you can send them to us as well. I wanted to give a quick update on the public and community engagement piece in that, which I mentioned in the opening. We did get a domain name for the Truth and Healing Council. And part of why we did that was so that we could do email forwarding for all of you and for the subcommittees. So one thing, we've set up for the subcommittees specific Gmails so that an email forwards to those Gmails. And if you're on a subcommittee, you'll get the login information so that you can all access those and review it at your leisure. And then they also come, you know, you'll have a Google Drive if you have like specific things you want to collaborate on within those subcommittees that'll be accessible through there. With email forwarding, you can either use an already established email, or you can establish one for yourself, or we can establish one for you. We want to keep the option open because we know that sometimes when people do things to establish for you, you're not going to check them, and then we have an issue where you're not checking your email. But we do want to urge that if you do have forwarding to an email that is a mixed email, it could be subject to PRAs or subpoena for anything in the event that that kind of attention is focused on the council. So, you know, we'll be reaching out over the next month to see how you want to do that, but we'll be setting up redirecting emails for all of you with the new domain. And right now the community page of the Tribal Advisor website, Truth and Healing landing page has all of this information consolidated with also the contact emails of each of the subcommittees if you'd like to take a look at that. And that, again, for all of you, it's tribalaffairs.ca.gov/CTHC/community. It also links straight to that blog page. But because of the nature of a blog and how it gets set up, we keep all those materials on that community page so that it's easier for you to get to. Recordings for May were posted, as well as the listening session overview. We're still working on getting those recordings from this week uploaded, but the listening session overview should be completed in the next few days. So we'll notify you of that as well. And then on the budget, it's still in the back and forth project process, but it is looking like the $450 annually for the research and all of that is going to come through. So we'll keep you posted when that's completely final as well, and should have a better report on that in the next month. So with that, unless there are any other council comments on either of those items, there's an unmute from Councilmember Burris.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. When you're uploading the recordings from today, would it be too much trouble to maybe separate excerpts out from what the governor had to say and what Assemblymember Ramos had to say? Because I think those would be good promotion materials if we do want to show that on social media, and especially when I present to my tribe. I think it would be really great if I could show like isolated videos of that.
Absolutely. What we can do is upload each of the, Assemblymember Ramos, we can clip from today's recording and have that separate. And then we can, the other two videos are already separate, so we can upload those as well for sharing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments, questions? Okay. So we'll now go into the regular public comment portion of today's meeting. And we'll go until the end of public comment or 4 p.m. If council members need to drop, you are able to drop as there's no more action, but do encourage you to stay on if there are public comments. And then James, do you wanna go over the raise hand function for folks that have dialed in?
Yeah, so first of all, the raise hand function in Zoom is available to you. And then if you are dialed in, you can press #2 to raise your hand and we'll recognize you and unmute at that point in time. There's currently one hand raised, Yoli Chavez. You should be able to speak now.
Okay. As Assemblyman Ramos said, our true story needs to be told. And in order to tell that story, supporting documents are often required And although some of the documents can be accessed online, many primary sources are still languishing in institutions up and down California. For instance, last week, my cousin Stephanie traveled from Fresno to San Diego to access records at a local church, and the records were literally falling apart in her hand. So I'm asking the council to consider monies be set aside for scanning and preserving primary source documents that will surely be needed. And I'm also going to be submitting an email with pictures of the conditions of some of the documents and other pertinent information. And then I just would like to thank you for that consideration.
Thank you. Appreciate that comment. And council members don't have to respond to this, but this is something that I think that the funding subcommittee may want to get a handle on, what digitization of these kind of records, you know, a ballpark estimate of what could be an ask for that.
Am I on or not? Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. You can.
That brings up the point that I tried to make last Tuesday on the listening session. I've been giving a lot of thought to the history and the research that this organization is going to be doing. And I really feel very strongly over the fact that I think if you can, I'd really like to see an Indian do this who is knowledgeable on programming, computer programming, reminding you that I'm not a nerd and I'm not familiar with this stuff. But I do know from past experience that there can be a program developed that would be my request to look at all the legal laws, the United States government laws, as they affect Native Americans in the state of California, separate those out from federal law 25 and just show the California laws as they affect the Native Americans. Then in addition to that, I'd like to see the same thing happen to the state of California in how it has fed off those federal laws and how they compare one way or the other. And also, if there's changes to those laws, that also be part of the historic process there. Show what's been changed, why it's been changed, and bring all that together in a readable manner where somebody like I can read it and understand. I think that history goes to the core of validating the genocide, as we're all beginning to talk about, and also awakening the dormant conscience to people who, you know, we're talking more and more about ignorance and excusing ourselves because of the ignorance. So I think if we can consolidate that type of history as the truth to how our people have been affected over the generations, and even today, it's just a different mode of it, but we're still being impacted by these laws and process and how people understand them and then claim that they don't know it through ignorance. So I hope that's clear as to what it is that I'd like to see the council do. If you have any questions, please try to get them out of me if I can give you an honest answer what I'm thinking about. Thank you.
Council member, and one thing that I may get fired for saying, but is it could be interesting to look at the benefits of property divestment. So in terms of like quantifying property tax benefits from those properties that are actually native lands. So.
There's currently no other public hands raised. Oh, we just got one. And we got in a couple. Chag, you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, first, thank you to everybody on this council. I appreciate all of the time and good efforts and good medicine that you each are putting toward this. I can't imagine the range of issues and emotions that you have to facilitate. So I appreciate each one of you for doing this on our behalf. I had a couple of comments that I was hoping to share. One, I had a question in terms of the history of what happened in California. I've always been intrigued by the 18 unratified treaties that were hidden, you know, in the Senate archives. I've literally been intrigued, like, well, where, you know, what building in DC? You know, they were physically hidden somewhere. I was curious if anyone else has brought that to the council, or if you're, you know, that's going to be in perhaps an emphasis. Even like I've seen maps, and I don't know if they're accurate or not, but maps regarding the territory in the state that were supposedly set aside during those negotiations between the land, the commissioners, the three federal commissioners, and then the representatives in the different, the native representatives in different areas. So just something like that would be powerful, to have a map showing that, you know, these were set aside and then denied. And then just the fact that, you know, the United States Senate was accessory to, you know, the denial of the existence of those agreements that were signed by Native people or X-marked by Native people around the state. So that was just something that I thought was unique. I'm not, you know, in my studies of Native America, I've not seen an example like that in other states that happened, you know, in that way. Has there been any discussion on that?
This is Councilman Member Giovanetti, and I wanted to say that there was a book written in the mid-70s by a College of the Redwoods history professor whose name escapes me, but he outlined the 18 unratified treaties that were negotiated in California. And Northern California had Reddick McKee, and Central and Southern California had Wozencraft and Barber. And, you know, he did quite a bit in chronicling all of that. And I'm sure that the council, that'll just be, you know, part and parcel of the documents that we'll be reviewing, you know, to provide the necessary context for, you know, and of course, the 7.5 million acres, I believe, was set aside. They were going to be, but that was just more than some people could stomach in the state. And so there was a protest to our state, to our congressional delegation in the Senate. And I guess there was collusion or agreement to hide those 18 treaties for 50 years someplace in a box. They finally made it out in like 1902 for some kind of scrutinization. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And James, we have a couple of council members who have raised hands. So Chairman Macaro, if you'd like to.
Yeah, I wanted to add to Chag. We've never met in person and still on Zoom. We're doing so virtually, but glad to hear from you. And I see got a jumpy signal here. I think the treaties they could arguably be a point of departure for our work. You know, of course, one of several, but I think because of that notion, there are, it's a core, I think it's a core thing to the trajectories, you know, we find ourselves in today as tribes and as individual Indian people. And I say that because on a macro scale of what happened in California, in my opinion, what happened with the treaties, it was the cause of so many effects, and but the most fundamental of which was the land cheat, you know, the lands, these massive land cessions that our forebears made, and with the understanding that there would be some reciprocation that was agreed to in these treaties. But what happened, and to your question, what happened was that they took the treaties back, Wozencraft and the other commissioners, I guess Barber was another. And because my tribe was party to Treaty K, it was the 17th of the 18 treaties a Treaty of Temecula, in other words. And they took these treaties, all 18 of them, to Washington, D.C., as you say, and as you understand. They were, treaties are, I guess, ratification is entertained in a secret vote. And that vote happened. And the vote to not ratify those treaties is what transpired. And subsequent to that vote, they were locked in a desk in the United States Senate. And that's where they spent, I think, 45 or 46 years. It was either 05 or 06, 1905 or 1906, I should say, when somebody opened the drawer and said, oh, whatever they say when they open their desk and say, look what we have here. And that was the beginning of the Indian Claims Commission and that whole endeavor that resulted in checks being issued ultimately in 1966 through 72 with a land valuation of 47 cents an acre based on all kinds of other cheats. And so on the surface, it looks like, oh, we have an act of the United States government, not the state of California. Why are we talking about the treaties? But I think Joe, Councilmember Giovanetti already mentioned collusion. I would add to that, RICO. There was coordination between state officials and U.S. Senate members and the timing was also convenient because gold was discovered in Southern California near Carmen Lucas's homeland. And gold was already being pulled out of the ground in Northern California. So all those things intertwine and they intersect with what happened with the treaties. And that really is one of the fundamental elements, I think, in the work that we need to proceed with. So it is really important, Jag, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, we've been dealing with housekeeping and committee governance as necessary, as it is necessary, but getting to the core topics is something that I'm looking forward to. So thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you, Chairman. Councilmember Lucas, it looks like, has a response to that comment.
Am I on? Yeah. Thanks, Mark, for that, because that's really important history, and I agree with it 100%. I think that the gold rush in the state of California was really at the core of this, which, yeah, again, took the land. And one of the things that I think is really important in the northern part of the state, if you go up there around Grass Valley and that, where all the gold was raped out of the earth still shows those scars on that land that was taken from the indigenous people up there. There is a young man, and I can't pronounce his last name, but he's the son of the former chairman of Agua Caliente, I believe. Mark, you may know him. He's been working on his doctorate at UC Riverside, who has been trying to write his dissertation on the 18 treaties. I think you're quoted in there. So it is part of that history, but the reason I'm commenting here is because I think there is a correlation between it and the laws between the federal government and the laws of the state of California. And I think if you can put all that together, it'll put light on that. So I agree, it's a terribly important subject.
That's Sean Milanovich is who you're referring to.
Thank you.
And we had Councilmember Milanovich, who's on the council now, was at the apology event as well. So it's all connected. Chief Sisk had a raised hand.
Yeah, you know, this has been one of the particular issues that I am totally in support of us doing something about and to make sure that something is done, because not just the treaties and the treaty lands in the state of California, that has been brought up and looked at by the California Claims case. And the California Claims case, starting in 1928 and ending in 1972, really should have the foundation for recognition of California Indians in the state. And until we really change that and recognize that, you know, all of the people on the California Claims case related to the treaty issues are recognized federal and state Indians. And to continue to ignore that blatant documents and being on the list of the California enrollment is a violation. You know, we can't even really talk about justice to the tribes until all of the tribes are addressed and are included and are taken care of. You know, there's no trickle down processes from the rancheria systems to the tribes that surround them. And those people are the ones who are on the California judgment roll list with documentation, you know, that went through the court system for settlement. And so to exclude that from the recognition process in California has been a real disservice to the California tribes, like the Winnemem Wintu, like Tuolumne and many other tribes in California, where we are basically just existing. We're not getting any of these government help and resources and protections. You know, right now we're going to the McLeod River to do a Bafas Chonas, which is a girls' rights ceremony. And because we're not recognized, the Forest Service cannot use the Farm Bill to close the area, even though we have decades of interaction with that forest. They know who we are. Yet there's no mechanisms that allow them to create a safe environment for our ceremony. Those are the kinds of things that are blatantly wrong with the recognition process and the ignoring of the California claims case, which is based on the treaties of the treaty lands and the lands of California. And so, you know, I think we need to delve into that. We need to create some sort of subcommittees, and we need to fix that in the state, because that's the basis of recognition of the California bloodlines. I mean, when you go back and you look at who's on those on the California judgment roll, you'll see the blood quantums are very high in that listing, because they come from just one or two generations from all of this land grab that happened in California. And so when you talk about justice and returning land and land back and all of that, that has no meaning to me and no meaning to other unrecognized tribal people. And we have to fix that. We have to look at some of these, this work that the academics have done. We have to look at what had gone through the court and how the BIA ignored those court rulings and how they stopped the benefits of the court ruling, where we used to be on that list. And then all of a sudden, the California claims case win just doesn't mean anything anymore. And now they say you have to apply for the very services that we won in the California claims case. They stopped them. Now you have to apply again to get them back. This is wrong. This is a wrong way. And so I'm hoping our council can put something together and to address these issues and start making a difference and bring it to the attention of the governor to say that the state of California really is a different kind of state than other places. We have the most unrecognized tribes in America. And this is so unjust, because, you know, there's no trickle down process, even with rights. We don't even have a right to our own ceremony, to do on our own ceremonial grounds. We cannot close it to the public. And this has to be fixed. I know the Nisenan and a lot of other people who are doing the hanging on process of salmon ceremonies and the runs and all of these other different things, and have files and files of work that they're trying to go through the process of recognition, which is an impossible. If we don't know that it's impossible by now, we should. It's been like 35, 40 years. People have been applying. This is craziness. This should not be allowed. We should not go any further with federal recognition when we already have the basis of all California Indians being federally recognized. That's what I think. So I'm in agreement with, let's do something. Let's move this forward. Let's put this on the top burner here and do something about it.
Thank you, Council Member. And I think it might be worth checking out yesterday's listening session. I know Council Member Harper was on, Council Member Myers, Council Member Bohorquez, and there was some really good discussion from Mary Risling about status and identity and framing it in a way that is bringing people together to address those kinds of needs rather than creating false divisions in the work kind of like this. And so we're thinking of bringing her actually to speak to the council about how that was framed, because I think it was a really elegant way of addressing the work without it becoming kind of a finger pointing exercise. So just want to put that out there. We have two more council members who have raised hands. We have public comments as well. So if council member comments are urgent, feel free to jump in. And I think it was council member Kessler Mata was first, if you'd like to.
Yeah. Thank you. And my 7-year-old is literally going to drag me out of here in 2 minutes. So I just wanted to say real quick, the California Tribal Fund at First Nations is actually starting to work on ancestral land mapping and so forth. So that's something that's directly related to this and not limited to federally recognized tribes. So I think it's something that we, you know, should think about supporting as well. I mean, at least myself, it's definitely of interest to me on a personal level, but I think addressing some of those unresolved issues that are hanging over from the 18 unratified treaties is super important. And doing that mapping, right, figuring out whose lands, where, and then of course, as a consequence of that, who now has those and how much have they actually benefited from that possession and so forth. So makes for interesting and large conversations that bring everybody into the fold that is a resident of California to this day. So. Sorry, I have to jump off, but thank you all for today.
Thank you, council member. And then we have council member Giovanetti, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to respond and say that regarding both the California Indian Land Claims case and the Tilly Hardwick case, which Tilly Hardwick brought back or restored federal status to, it was 17 or 18 Northern California tribes mainly. And that those two cases, you know, whatever federal either indifference or foot dragging or, you know, I know that they're working against great odds, you know, beginning back in the 20s, right, for the California Indian land judgment case. But the weaknesses or the breakdowns and what they were able to accomplish, you know, in the California Indian land judgment case, $29.2 million to the tribes, but what, 8 or 10 to the attorneys, and the tribes had to pay for every nail and every biscuit ever given to their ancestors before they got a share of a one-time payment of $660-something dollars for the theft of California from our ancestors. That those taken collectively, you know, they kind of show up in many ways. One that comes to mind immediately is that in California, with 116 recognized tribes, we have 4 tribes that have recognized executive order fishing rights. I can't even describe how abysmal that is, how that could be. You know, like it's incredible. And I, you know, I just wanted to put that out there because it's just one manifestation of the long drawn out breakdowns of the federal and state apparatus to try to, you know, do anything honorable or, you know, ethical, moral with the California tribes. Thank you.
Thank you, council member. And then James, it looks like we have several raised hand. Oh, council member McCarr, would you like to?
Yeah, just real quick on the tail end of what, of how council member Giovanetti just finished. It's always been appalling in my view since I was a kid that a California Indian has to pay for a fishing or hunting license in California. It's a little thing, but to add insult to injury in the present day, based on what Giovanetti just said, absolutely.
Some of us just get raised to think that we can do whatever we want because our parents told us we could. And then we learn that there's laws that mean that we can't. But if you don't know about them, they don't apply. James, if you want to moderate the raised hands, we'd love to have some public comments.
Sure. Tony Cadero is the next person that should be able to mute themselves.
Thank you. And I just wanted to thank
Tony, it looks like you muted yourself accidentally.
I thought I unmuted myself.
Now you are.
I thought I unmuted myself. But I did want to thank Councilmember Sisk for those powerful comments about the disgrace of the recognition process and the lack of recognition for so many California Native peoples. I raised my hand because I just wanted to quickly ask if I don't see a youth subcommittee listed under the subcommittees, and you had spoken about that at one of your earlier meetings. I'm wondering if that's still under consideration, because I have several young family members who were interested in the work of a youth subcommittee.
Absolutely. And so the youth subcommittee has been formed and has met a few times, and they are Councilmember Bojorquez and Councilmember Elliot Santos. And they are actually looking for more youth engagement of how to move forward. So we'd love to chat with whoever is interested. And there is an email that is live now for youth if there's input on that. But they will have some specific targeted engagement as we move forward and are thinking about how to do potentially youth GONA, youth retreats, things that are specific to the youth so that they can define how they want to engage with this council. And we do need some more input. And so if you go to the community site, the tribalaffairs.ca.gov/CTHC/community, there's a link to the questions, and there's some questions that are specific for the youth council. And then you can also email any input to youth@truthandhealing.com. And that will go into the subcommittee for their review and consideration as well.
I'm sorry, can you give that email address again?
Youth@truthandhealing.com. And that link is also on the community site on the Tribal Affairs website as well.
Great, thank you.
All right, next person to speak, Ramirez Luis. You should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello, this is Louise Miranda Ramirez, with Ohlone Costanoan Esalen Nation. We're talking about the 18 treaties. We discussed that a little bit on Wednesday. And part of the problem for us is that we have gone trying to rebury our ancestors, and with the help of the Yokuts and with Chumash, met with the Pentagon and others, and they actually told us we could not build affiliation with the Chumash, even though we have shared grandparents and some ceremonies. So if you look at the actual map from that, the 18 treaties, and C.E. Kelsey made it, the Yokuts are in the valley, and it, their land based on those treaties goes from one side of California all the way to the coast. So they don't even identify that it's us or all the tribes in the area, the coastal area. They give that land to the Yokuts. And in meeting with the Pentagon, we had to meet with all the Yokuts in order to claim our ancestors. We're glad that they chose to assist us and represent us so that we could rebury our ancestors. But it was still, it's very hard based on those treaties that are giving our land, our homelands, to people outside of the area. And so building relationships, the treaties are important, but we really need to look at them. We were discussing that quite a bit on Wednesday, and I think it's important for everyone to know that the maps aren't correct. You know, we need to be able to speak to our homeland has been there forever. And if we had trade with Yokuts and we had trade with Chumash, that that'd be identified, and that the Pentagon, the government, federal government, doesn't have the right to assign us to our ancestors. So that's about it. I just want to say there's a lot to the 18 treaties as well. Thank you.
The next person with their hand up is Kathy Corey. Kathy, you should be able to mute yourself. Kathy, you should be able to unmute yourself if you'd wish to speak. Doesn't look like she's unmuting herself. We can move on to the next speaker. Chag, you have your hands up raised again, so I'll allow you to talk.
Thank you. And Chairman Macaro, it is nice to meet you, at least on Zoom. Hopefully one day we can meet in person. So my next question, I have a background in philanthropy, so I'm very interested in, you know, the discussion of, you know, when you have council members approach foundations or private individuals who might be interested in donating toward whatever the goals of the council are. And so two thoughts. One is there are an enormous number of California Native run nonprofits around the state at this point, a lot of whom have very strong missions, good culturally grounded leadership, and how possibly but they're faced with the state and the philanthropic barrier of lack of access. So they're out there trying to do good work on shoestring budgets. So possibly in the future, because this council, you carry a lot of, I think a lot more weight in terms of if you ask for meetings with philanthropists, perhaps they'll respond. But to connect those potential donors and foundations to these other Native nonprofits. And I don't know if anyone from the MIDU Summit Consortium has spoken to anybody just yet, but that's a group of 9 MIDU tribes, some recognized, some not, who were able to get land back, ancestral land. They have a website, but it might be interesting to listen from them, from their perspective in terms of getting land back through the nonprofit pathway, you know, if you're not recognized, you know, what can you do next? So that, but then also I'm just very curious, when you do approach foundations in the future, what the goals will be, and I know you might not have them just yet, that's fine, but how you might choose to prioritize. Is it going to be to buy land back, or is it going to be to fund, you know, document restoration or sacred site restoration? I'm just curious on your, if the conversation has been going on that route.
I can speak to that. And because the subcommittee has not yet been formed, that's still all in process. How we've been framing it is that there's two tracks that speak to what you've just mentioned, Chag, where there's asks that are specific to, you know, the short-term work of this council in terms of, you know, digitization, archival work, things like that, that the funding committee will think about when they actually convene and meet about priorities. And then there's the second piece of funding the actual restorative, reparative work, which would be, I think, aligned with, you know, sustainable land transfer type of things, sustainable restoration of rights, things like that. And what does that look like on a dollar, as a dollar amount, so that, you know, the Levi's of the world, the gold companies of the world, I'm making things up, but those people can actually just see that, go, this is part of our portfolio for reparations. We want to pay that. We want to do something right. And they can just do that. And so it's a little convoluted because, again, the funding committee will have to understand and think about what its priorities are going to be. And they will work with Decolonizing Wealth to make those asks. But that's kind of conceptually how we've been framing it to this point.
And Kathy Corey, you should be able to unmute yourself again. Kathy. I saw the mute come off, but didn't hear you. If you can try again, please. She might be having technical issues. I see the mute come off, but I hear nothing. We do have a panelist hand raised from Joan.
Okay, I think Councilmember Harper, feel free to speak. And then if Kathy is able to figure out unmute, then we'll hear from her.
Yes, Christina, I just wanted to lend support for the idea of bringing Mary Riesling forward to speak to our council. I think she had some very good insights about how we think about Indian people and how to treat them. You know, she's looked at things so that we don't pit federally recognized people against non-federally recognized people. And she really had some good insights about thinking about how people identify and as California Natives and versus their political status. So I thought those were salient nuances that I appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, council member.
And going back to Kathy, can you unmute yourself yet? Doesn't look like it, so we'll move to Cindy Childress. Cindy, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hi, thank you. I was just curious if I missed it, or how are the subcommittees going to be formed? Are you going to be taking different tribal members from different tribes? How is those committees going to be formed? Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. And so to speak to that, each subcommittee is determining how they form their own committee. And so some committees, for example, the funding committee, it's really for a very targeted purpose. And so it's less of an open committee. Other committees like the academic committee are looking to see which partners as they form actually their mission and their charge so that they can get those partners that would be responsive to it, are looking to see which academic partners would be helpful and how they can benefit from helping with the council. The youth subcommittee, for example, is still seeking what the youth want from a subcommittee, so could actually look like a council like this, but at the youth level. And so to answer, each subcommittee is kind of forming based on the needs that are trying to be addressed by that subcommittee. And these are, again, committees that are being formed specific to the work and the business of the council, whereas once the council shifts into the actual issue areas or however it divides this work, there will be, we anticipate, probably committees that speak to that that have different kinds of open-endedness and may be, you know, something kind of like this or something just a free-for-all. We'll figure it out. Again, fudgy answer, but it depends on the needs of each subcommittee. That said, I do want to say, because I think this is also kind of the undercurrent of the question, is if you're interested in working with a certain subcommittee, you can email that info at catruthandhealing.com. And we will try to, you know, figure out if that request can be accommodated or whether there's certain parameters that the subcommittee has set up. That wouldn't allow for that.
I'm gonna ask Kathy to unmute one more time and hopefully.
Hilly, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Kathy, good job.
Thank you, I apologize. I'm having difficulty with my screen here. I would like to speak to the topic of the subcommittees, and specifically regarding the subcommittee being considered on disenrollment. Something that chairperson or councilperson Lucas said earlier was not exactly related to disenrollment, but it really struck me. And that was that the early California laws essentially negated Indian people. Indian people today are being negated by our own people. And that's often in violation of the tribal law or making change to tribal law in order to make that okay. I feel that this wasn't acceptable for California to do. It was a travesty. And it's also a travesty against our own people that this is occurring today with fully 25% of California tribes at least disenrolling thousands of Indian people within California. I don't think that was acceptable for California to do, and I also don't think it's acceptable for our Indian people to do, and for the same reasons, which were greed and power. So I'm very much hoping that this council will find it essential to have a subcommittee on disenrollment and try to find a solution or help or support to the thousands of California Indians that have been disenrolled throughout our state. I really appreciate your consideration of that, and I want to thank every single council person for taking that into consideration, and blessings to you all. Thank you.
And that's the last hand raised currently.
I just would like to comment on this last comment. I think she's truly hit the core there. I know there's a lot of political stuff that goes on that I'm not aware of, and I probably wouldn't want to be a part of if I knew more about it. I do feel very strongly that when folks have been part of a Indian tribe for many years through family, whether or not it's a bloodline or years ago they were adopted and then all of a sudden they're disenrolled, that is a very strong, deep spiritual violation. It's much like a punctual wound. I don't know that folks can ever psychologically and emotionally recover from that. It's like living for 85 years and finding out that your bloodline isn't what it was, does that mean that your 85 years has been a lie? These ask some pretty profound questions emotionally and to the mental health of those folks that have been disenrolled. I'm not one of them. I know a few of them. I've watched what's happened, but I experience a lot of stuff in my own life as an Indian who's in a peculiar position. So I just appreciated the lady's comments and just wanted to reinforce that. Thank you.
I will add again, I think that Mary's comments yesterday were really poignant on this piece because it captures both that element, the recognition element, and then also, you know, I would say elements that I think people worry about as we move forward as Indian people of blood quantum and how we define ourselves. So just putting some things out there. Looks like we have another public comment.
Marisa Sullivan, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marisa Sullivan. I'm the tribal chair for the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation, one of many Native groups that are not recognized by the federal government. We are by the state of California. I'm so sorry that I only caught the tail end of Chairwoman Sisk and what she had to say. But what she had to say really spoke to me, because that is a constant battle for us, the people that I represent. We have over 2,300 people enrolled. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And that's also a lot of generations that are from those people that are not recognized. And I hate even using that word, but apparently that's the word we need to use. I was in on that particular listening session yesterday with Mary Riesling, and she was really a good person to be listening to and have a dialogue with. So I think the points I'd like to raise right now are the thing about being disenrolled as has happened to people. I would also like to also point up an experience that happens oftentimes, which is, I'm going to call it erasure or even a disenrollment that is being done by other tribes in our area, other groups, merely because they have been weaponized with what are the mission records. And so we have a constant battle that is people actually saying that we're not authentic Indians, that we're not authentic Chumash, merely because someone who has built his whole entire career by, academic career, by being the decider of who's Chumash based on his research and papers that he's written, has weaponized, you know, what is now going on, the third generation of a people coming and saying that we're not authentic Chumash. And I don't even know if you can understand what I'm talking about right now, but it's just really a hideous thing that we have to constantly go through. And now with the social media, that is, we used to have people come to public meetings and now turn it into just this free for all of stopping the voice of a person because they considered them not real Chumash. Now we're talking over 30 years ago. We're talking as recent as 2018. And now we have social media, which is now a hideous, you know, thing upon itself, where people are allowed to do whatever and say whatever they want. I've had my daughter being called out and being, just making a presentation and actually being almost run out of a something she was doing because someone had called that particular facilitator. There's just a lot going on that currently right now we're dealing with remains that were found by an ancestor in the Montecito, California area. And we may not be called, even though we are the contact point of contact as per the Heritage Commission, which I confirmed on Monday of last, we may not be called because there's a group that is in Santa Barbara that has, in essence, made sure that we don't get called. And that goes against what is plainly on the thought and the what the Native American Heritage Commission is built up to be. So I'm just hoping that it looks like the process that you have all been going through and that we've all been following and been there, you know, with you, although you guys are the ones that on the committees and the council people, it looks like that there's a stage now where things have gone off into the subcommittee realm. And so I wonder if at where on the subcommittee list something like this may be addressed. Would it be under recognition, do you think? Would it also be with our youth where they're going to get attacked, as a non-federally recognized, person? So, I wonder, I'm just trying to figure out how we who, and trying to give you, and as we're all working together, as we're always asked to do, because that's the best way to go, right? Working together. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to and where we fit into these subcommittees and how best to contribute. So I suppose that's a long way of getting around to that. But again, I just want to thank you all. I know this is grueling. It's a long process you've all committed to, and I really do appreciate what you're doing. And I also appreciate how you've made yourself available in these listening sessions. So thank you.
Councilmember Giovanotti.
Yeah, I wanted to respond on the disenrollment thing. Around 2001, the California Indian Conference held that year at Sacramento State, I suggested a panel titled the disenrollment wars. We know that's quite a title, the Indian Wars? I don't know. But anyway, there were three of us, Dr. Joseph Dupree from Cheyenne River back in South Dakota, and Dr. Dennis Chappabitty, a member of the Oklahoma Bar. He's Comanche and Apache. He's retired now. And myself. And not to sound self-congratulatory, but I kind of think we had 100 people in that room. It was kind of standing room only. And there were people crying, talking about their own stories, having been disenrolled. So it's an important facet. And so maybe that's something that our council will look at, over time, because about 3 or 4 years ago, the National Congress of American Indians at the, I think it was the Seattle conference, they had a panel of persons who had participated in the writing of an anthology on enrollment standards among the Plateau tribes. And that was really interesting. That was fascinating. I can't think of the title right now, but I'm sure that the people at NCEI could pull it up quickly enough to help any of us get that title. But regardless, of course, enrollment touches upon an attitude of people are either by nature or upbringing inclusive of all their relations or most of their relations or exclusive. And I think in situations where people are inclusive, you frequently see their enrollment standards being maybe under 1/4 blood or 1/8 blood or 1/16, or even Citizens Band Potawatomi, not that far away in Oklahoma, but it's over the hill. They require a modest amount, 1/32, I believe, but a lot of tribes have that standard. So so inclusive are people, tribes like Tunica Biloxi, they go down to 1/64 down there in Louisiana. And we have tribes that do that in California or don't have any percentage at all requirement. And exclusive, I think the highest blood standard I've heard in the country is 5/8. I know there's at least two or three tribes that require that blood quantum thing. And of course, it's a BIA concept that, you know, I'm not sure if it's life is, if it's, you know, if it's run its course. I'm not sure what it serves, but then again, we have some tribes who don't enroll their children. I don't understand that one, but I just wanted to comment on that because it's a rich, fertile, painful thing, you know, the disenrollment. Thank you.
Thanks, council member. And I would say, I know we're thinking about having resources for the council to work through how to work through this work. I know that's less eloquent because again, you all see me at this time on a Friday after a long meeting and my brain never works as well as it should. But that we are thinking about having someone help all of you work through historical trauma work. But there's other things that I think that could be helpful for this council specifically to think about and also the public generally in kind of like, for lack of a better term, because this is how people talk about it, but decolonizing our thinking about solutions and how we identify ourselves. Because even having a baseline where we're talking about California Indians as a blood quantum, that's not a native term, you know, like I think it might be worth just thinking about how to undo a lot of the learning that has got us here, because if we don't, any solutions that the council, the public, anybody is proposing are going to be based in those categories that aren't ours. So just putting that out there. Council member Giovanetti still has a raised hand. I think that it just isn't lowered yet. And Chief Sisk has a raised hand.
Thank you. I took my hand down.
Okay. I just wanted to also support that statement about blood quantums and the applications for membership in these tribes or rancherias. And really, in my mind, it's like we're at that tipping edge of losing what an actual tribe is. And we're politicizing it and we're putting it into documents about what a tribe is. But the actual jobs of the tribe are vanishing. The bloodlines, and what that means is that a tribal way of life, that people had jobs to do, whether they're the acorn collectors or the deer hunters or the fishermen or the basket makers, whatever those are, is the important part of the tribalism that is dying right now. It's like we're going out of existence and we're going to have these skills left. You know, people are going to learn how to make baskets, but they're not going to learn how to gather, and they're not going to learn how the songs go, and they're not going to learn from the people who went before them. They'll be in a classroom or even virtual reality to do the things that the tribe coordinated and balanced and brought harmony to the area in which they live. And that's the difference that I see is being threatened, not so much. And then of course our rights to do that in that area without all this, you know, I don't even think I care about recognition if it wasn't preventing me or stopping the protection of that way of life. But when the laws of the land don't protect the rights of the tribe, then these other things that are in place, you know, that developed from the treaty times and the California claims case, where we paid for everything, we paid for all those rancherias, and yet we're not recognized, or we're not on that list. We're not, no other federal agency is able to help us because the BIA doesn't have us on the list. They have amnesia or something. So, you know, no matter how many other federal agencies you work with, they're not helping to protect that tribal way of life. And that's the crux here of what the harm is. And how are you going to pass traditions when you're so busy fighting the government for your very right to do it? So I think, you know, we need to really reevaluate some of these things that have brought some tribes the privileges, while other tribes continue to struggle to hang on to a way of life with no support and without the rights of the government. You know, my grams was the first one to utilize the American Indian Religious Freedoms Act when it came out. And now we don't qualify for that. We can't touch it because somewhere along the line, we're not those people anymore. You know, and that's the harm that is happening here at this level. And so I'm hoping that our council can look into those issues. And I know that some of the people who are getting disenrolled are also on the California claims case. You know, if we're people who paid for the public or the private and federal lands that create recognition for other people, other Indians, then shouldn't we also be recognized, since that money was deducted from all of the California Indians who were on that judgment roll list? So that's kind of where I'm at, and I'm hoping that a committee or subcommittee, or we can get Mary to come in and really talk about some of these things and to find a way to approach this, because it is horribly unjust.
Thank you, council member. And I think before we have final comments from any council members who'd like to have them, I do want to urge the council to get away from quantifying Indianness. You know, based on the history here, you know, I think there's no, you don't shouldn't have to justify your existence as a California Indian person, given that everybody was pretty much slaughtered. So however people chose to survive that, I think is not something that they should have to justify. I would also like to point this council to thinking about a solutions-oriented lens versus again, sitting in the pointing fingers, haves, have not lens, and think about what does a California Native person today need to be made whole? So is it access to, and this is something Mary spoke to, but is it access to traditional gathering because that's how they define their Indianness? Or is it, you know, not having to compete with non-Native people to showcase their arts and crafts? Is it, you know, access to their traditional lands because that's where they feel home? So, you know, I think this council is charged with both thinking about what is lacking for each individual California Native person, regardless of status, you know, or whatever that means in people's minds. You know, so what we're hearing a lot of is that there's been a deprivation. And what does that mean for an individual? You know, so if I become disenrolled, what does that mean for me? It doesn't change that I'm Indian, but what does that mean for the things that I'm able to do? So how do we as a council, how do you as a council, sorry, I got too ahead of myself. How do you as a council think about making people whole in a way that isn't offensive to principles of sovereignty and isn't overstepping the authority that the state should have, really? So you can all yell at me after the fact and write mean things about me, but that, I do want to reorient how this council looks at what needs to be done, because if we look at existing mechanisms and say these are the things that need to change that haven't changed and they're there because of, you know, intentional actions, then you are missing an opportunity. So anyway, I'll leave it to council members for final thoughts. I know we're over time, but then we'll close out once you'll have your say. Oops.
I just would like to make one comment, and that's regardless of where we stand collectively in a whole community of Indians, we need to really take charge of our individuality, whether or not we're recognized, federally recognized. I often looked at this federally recognized business with, and I probably shouldn't say this, but you'll forgive me, I'm very blunt sometimes. I wonder what it is about being federally recognized as so great. Look at the United States government and its history towards the American Indian across this country. So who gives a damn? My feeling is be proud of who you are. More importantly, you are the product of your ancestors. You should be extremely proud of them and proud of your heritage based on that. You shouldn't have to explain that to anybody. You should just carry the torch and remember you're an American Indian. That's my feelings.
And I think the council agrees that that's a wonderful note to end on. So I think we'll end there. Thank you, Councilmember Lucas. Thank you, council members. And we will see you all.
I just want to wish all the fathers on the council happy Father's Day this weekend.
Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge Mark. It's good seeing you.
Same here, Carmen. Spunkier than ever.